You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. If you gamble, use your game sense. Visit GameSenseAB.ca to find out more. And so it's Goalie Bob versus Aiden Hill. I want to start with Aiden Hill because I know that Vegas got good team defense in front of him, but Aiden Hill's playing like the best hockey of his life at the most important time and is obviously, I think, earning himself likely a new contract with Vegas next season.
Yeah, like, you know, it's interesting. I was looking at the numbers, and actually I had to do something locally here earlier in the day. You know, sort of got the question about each guy, and, you know, top of my head, I didn't have the numbers in front of me, didn't have the computer up, and it was more of a, you know, like, if anybody's going to seal a series out of this group, it's going to be Bob, and Aiden's going to be more about, you know, how they play in front of him and whether they can sort of insulate him. And, you know, made the comparison to Colorado last year winning, I wouldn't say despite goaltending, but clearly it wasn't one of the main reasons they won. And then I pull up the numbers and holy crap, Aiden Hill's expected save percentage is almost identical to Bob's, and he's outperformed it by a more significant margin. Like, he has been really good. And it's the interesting thing to me is, you know, and I've heard, I think Jennifer Botterill's done a really nice job of talking about like how well he gets across and how well he's managing lateral plays. And we talk a lot about, you know, how those lateral plays, like that's the dangerous offense in today's game. That's what teams are trying to create. And comparing that to Bobrovsky and the fact that he also, like his ability to get across on these really tough east-west passes. And the thing that is different between the two of them and the thing that allows Aiden Hill to do it compared to Bob being, you know, great rotation technique and just explosive power is where Aiden Hill starts on the ice. You are very much seeing a guy who Vegas targeted because they thought he would fit with the teachings of Sean Burke, who's in his first year as their goalie coach. And if you watch where Aiden is on the ice, like it's just such a conservative approach, especially when you contrast it to Bobrovsky. So if he's always in his crease, I mean, unless he gets chasing a little bit and starts sliding and out of position, like on plays where he's reading the play and set and moving in a controlled manner, he is always in the blue and usually max two-thirds up his crease, usually more what we would call half depth, so halfway up the crease depth. And by playing within that framework, the amount of distance he has to cover to get across on those same chances. Like, I want somebody to, if I was working for a TV network right now, I would be making comparisons of those saves, and there have been a bunch of these playoffs on those cross-seam, cross-ice passes where both guys have gotten across and made really good saves. But I'd compare the distance they have to travel, and I'm willing to bet that Aiden Hill's, by the time you add, it's for every foot and a half we're outside of the crease on one side of the ice, whether it's above it or just outside it, you know, east-west to the side, that's an extra, like, 2 to 3 feet we have to get across to make that save on the other side. And I think there's a big difference in terms of styles for these two goaltenders. And at the end of the day, they're both able to make those difficult saves, but the reasons they do are very different. It's sort of just another example of there's no one way to do this position. And you know, the other part here that I think gets lost, and it's a spotlight I know he's not eager for because there was a reason for all these years he wasn't a goalie coach. But you remember us hearing about Sean Burke as the goalie whisperer. Like that was a tune that a lot of people sang. And I know he wanted to be, you know, he's looking for more of a management job as opposed to being back on the ice as a day-to-day goalie coach. And here he is in his first year with a guy that not a lot of people would have, you know, tagged as a future Stanley Cup finalist. And despite using multiple goaltenders, he's got them there. So as much as Sean maybe didn't want to be a full-time goalie coach, this is probably just going to cement the fact that most people want him to be in that role because he's done a heck of a job again with Aiden Hill. And when you watch where he plays on the ice and the success it leads to, I think a lot of that ties to the philosophy that Sean Burke likes to teach and likes to coach.
That's totally fair. Kevin Woodley joins us. So, Kevin, like goalie Bob has been called upon to make bigger saves, no question. I think Vegas has better team defense, and that's why I'm going with Vegas. But if you're Florida, what's the way to beat Aiden Hill?
Well, I think one of the things you have to, you know, be sort of cognizant of is, you know, and this ties into a lot of what I just talked about in terms of his positioning and where he is on the ice. For him, we normally think of those lateral plays, the closer to the net, low slot line below the hash marks. Like, that's one of the biggest increases. You've heard me talk about this in the last 5 years in the NHL. Like, that's how, why we have more offense. That's one of the areas that has increased the most. The biggest growth in offensive opportunities and production is from those low slot line plays. And the thing is, they kind of play right into Aiden Hill's strengths. And so his numbers are off the chart on lateral plays below the hash marks, and that's continued in the playoffs. That was prevalent right through the regular season for Aiden. Where his numbers dip to well below expected are on east-west plays above the hash mark. So as much as the mentality and the temptation is to be closer to the net, to create plays closer to the net, and I do think you can get him scrambling at times by attacking below the goal lines, if you're going east-west, say off the rush or whatever, you're actually better to make those plays higher in the zone and put him into more of a reaction situation where even though his depth allows him to beat those passes across and be set, make him react, make him be active with the hands. He's still been really good with it, but historically over the course of the season, that's where he struggled more than in tight, where you think you've got a bang-bang backdoor play, and when you combine the short distance he has to travel with just sort of the length of his limbs, and it's not just height, it's the ability to sort of extend and seal with those leg pads the way he does. You have a tendency to turn what looks like a bang-bang, grade-A, you know, chance into a momentum-changing save for Aiden Hill in the Vegas Golden Knights. So, yeah, you heard me talk a little bit about this with Stuart Skinner earlier in the playoffs, that as much as you want to get in tight, that's where his strengths are, and that you're better to sort of challenge him higher in the zone, make plays, and hey, it's easier said than done at this time of year to get to the middle, but make plays into the high slot as opposed to always trying to funnel pucks down low. At the very least, you're not playing to his strengths as much if you're trying to create those types of chances.
Kevin Willie joins us on Bet Sports Leader TSN 1260. What did you see as the struggles for Jake Oettinger in this series?
Yeah, like, it's really hard for me to look at that series and not think there was an element of fatigue. And I know people think that I'm just, you know, it's a bit of a bailout on him, for him. I do think, you know, and we talked about this going into the playoffs, you know, nothing exposes you, and that's not even a fair word to use, I guess, but, like, the playoffs really, teams really start to lock in on tendencies. They start to lock in on, again, we call them strengths and weaknesses, but they really should just be relative weaknesses. Like, these are the best in the world. It goes back to the conversation we had about Andrei Vasilevsky in the first round of the playoffs. Like, is he bad on screens and tips? No, he's not bad, but he's not as good at them as he is on pretty much every other type of scoring chance. And so teams target it, teams go after it. And inevitably, we see goals going in that way on Andrei Vasilevsky. I think there are things that, for the first time, there were elements in Jake's game that I thought Calgary did a poor job of attacking last year. As brilliant as he was in that first-round series, they didn't extend him and stretch him out on laterals. That lack of rotation into the post, the exposure that comes on the short side of the net, if you can make that pass to the outside, bottom edge of the circle, as opposed to, you know, in the edges of the slot where, you know, he cuts plays off, but if you draw him out lengthwise, like, there's short side exposure there. I think we saw teams try and generate that. But most of all, I just, you know, there's some goals in there that you wouldn't expect to go in on him over the course of these series. There were some tough breaks, pucks off sticks and things like that. But it just looked at times like even when they won game five, and it was a backdoor in tight play, low high backdoor. A lot of people just looked at it as a tap in. But I looked at his post play and the way he sat in the reverse and had no engagement, no activation with the inside edge, and no push across on it on a play that, again, yeah, hey, low slot line play, high quality scoring chance. But the way he reacted to it, or frankly, the way he didn't react to it and the way he wasn't loaded, like, it just screams fatigue to me, Jason. Like, you know, one of those things where you're actually looking at the technical elements of a guy who's pretty good technically, and you're like, that's just not there. Like, he's actually resting. There's a point where he's actually resting on his post rather than being engaged. And I think we look at fatigue as physical, but when we ask these goalies to do things they'd never done before, like, he'd never played that much before in that period of time, and now you're asking him to do it on that stage, I think the mental fatigue can be as much as anything. And he showed his mental strength by bouncing back from some of those nights, But the inconsistency that we saw from night to night as the playoffs wore on, like, you know, again, people say it's just a cop out for me. But I've already talked about the issues I see, not even issues, the relative strengths and weaknesses of his game and been quite open about it. Overall, it's hard for me not to think that fatigue played a large role in this. As much as none of them will ever want to admit it, there were just enough signs there.
So when you talk to goalie coaches and stuff in the summer, is that something like, will teams start pressing more to say, guys, we got to get a backup and we got to trust that in a seven-game series we can play in one game?
Well, this is the interesting thing here. Maybe the conversation does shift, Jason. I mean, certainly it shifted, you know, as we're talking, right? Like the mantra was, you know, like, we got to get the starts down to like 50, 55 in the regular season so that they have energy left for the playoffs. But now what are we talking about? We're talking about Linus Ullmark, who never started that many games in a row in the regular season to try and keep his number down and keep him fresh, but we expect him to do it in the playoffs. Is that fair? I don't pretend to have answers here, but I agree with you. It's a conversation that probably starts to happen. Like, hey, we're resting this guy. He's not playing that much. But if he hasn't played seven games in 14 days, which is what a seven-game series typically is, especially in the first two rounds, can we fairly expect him to stay sharp mentally and physically? Maybe for 7 and 14 you can, but can we for 14 and 28, if that's what two rounds looks like, and you go to seven games in two rounds? Do we see diminishing returns as those games pile up, whether it's mentally or physically, to the point where, hey, yeah, our number one guy hasn't done this all year. Now we put him in this situation and he's at 80%. Would we be better off giving the other guy a night because we can get our guy back to 100%? I think there are times maybe when teams had leads in series, as much as nobody wants to create that bulletin board material, where maybe a decision like that early in a playoff might benefit you as it goes on. And those are conversations I think at least some progressive goalie coaches are going to start to have around the league. Whether it goes anywhere or not, we'll see. But at least it's a talking point that, frankly, I don't think was there before. Because everything before was, hey, let's limit their starts so they're fresh in the playoffs. There's a flip side to that. It's, can they make it all the way through?
Yeah. Well, and I get that it's a tough decision, don't me? It's easy for me to ask it because I'm not the one whose job potentially is on the line. And your player's like, what do you mean you're going to that guy? Like, I think, like, Swayman and Ullmark were unique because you had two guys who had great numbers all year long. Lots of guys, there's a big drop-off, even numbers-wise, from their backup to their starter. So I can see why, you know, there's no situation's always going to be the same. But it would be interesting to see.
It's easy for me to say, right? I always advocate for it. Like, I'm always talking about tandems and all that stuff. It's real easy for me to say that. I'm not one with my job on the line. Look what happened in Mini. I still think it was the right decision to go to Marc-Andre Fleury. His numbers were fantastic. He did not have a good game two. But I think the fact they did it was why they got a better Gustafson in game three. And again, I'm not sure Ottinger balanced out and he got his legs under him, but I'm still not sure double OT in the first game of the playoffs wasn't something that affected him all the way through from that point on.
Kev, great stuff, buddy. We'll chat with you next week. Have a good one.
Awesome. Can't wait. We'll have at least one game under our belts from the Stanley Cup Finals before we chat, and I look forward to breaking it down.